Hey, Sox fans, welcome to Good Guys Talk Back, a local fan-centric Chicago White Sox podcast, hosted by Nick Borowski and Pat Hester.
Hey, Sox fans, welcome back to Good Guys Talk Back. Hey, this is episode 266. I am Nick Morawski. This is a fan-centric Chicago White Sox podcast. We do this live on Sunday nights, 9:15 on our YouTube channel. Subscribe, pass it along to other Sox fans. And if you can, join us in the comments, because who wouldn't want to be talking about this team right now? What a weekend it was, and what can be this coming week for the Southsiders. Pat Hester is back with us from assignment. We got a lot to get to here as our Sox were swept this opening day weekend to the Detroit Tigers, that pesky AL Central rival of ours. Good thing we're in the Central, huh? But it's a -3 run diff. That's what you're going to hear at work or around the water cooler, if that's still happens in terms of conversations about this team. We're going to chop it up here. Pat, good to have you back. First impressions, anything at all? It's your floor.
You know what? Tennessee is a fantastic state to move to. If you're a franchise looking to go there, I spent the past week in the Pigeon Forge area with the family for spring break. Fantastic. My first impressions, aside from the first impressions of the first three games of the season, was, and I texted you this, a ton of people from Chicago and a lot of Sox fans seen on vacation. So you know this because you've done this before, and you're always in something White Sox. I don't think you have many other outfits in the wardrobe. I have a couple, but I was wearing Sox gear, and then you see other folks that are wearing Sox gear, and you get the head nod and or the go Sox, and then the inevitable, boy, we're gonna suck this year. And then the commiserating starts, and you're just having conversations with strangers. But it reminds me of what a great fan base this organization does have, despite the way the organization continues to treat its fans. And that's what makes it so great to talk to you every Sunday night. Not the fact that, beside the fact that we've been friends for over 20 years, but the fact that we can talk and we can communicate and be around other crazy people like us on Twitter, and welcome on Twitter and Facebook and all YouTube and all that good stuff. So good to be back talking White Sox baseball. In terms of what happened over the weekend, I don't know why this is going to drive me insane until the day I die. I don't know why this team can't win an extra inning game at home. Why? Why is it so hard to do that? I don't understand it. I'll never understand it. The one-run losses, it's driving Pedro Grifol, who is, you know, obsessed with turning this thing around. You know, I'm sure he's crazed about it. So, it is what it is. We're on pace to lose 162 games, and we'll see if that trend continues.
Oh, good point, Pat. Hello to John and Peyton and Drew, Sydney. We're going to talk, John. We got to give a proper shout out to John in just a little bit when we talk opening day, but really do appreciate everybody joining us here on this Easter Sunday. If you're celebrating in the evening, letting those deviled eggs and spiral ham digest, hearing some White Sox chatter, jump in with any thoughts that you've got. We do appreciate it. So, you know, we're going to talk, the results. We'll talk, obviously, the extra inning situation. Eloy Jimenez, who I've kind of started to get foolishly bullish on, especially after his spring, has got some issues once again, health-wise. I want to talk, some of the food stuff going on at the ballpark, but definitely want to talk opening day. I think maybe that's where we should start it.
Let's talk about, you were at opening day, right?
I was.
And I
was
didn't know you were going. I didn't realize.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know you were going because I was gone and I missed it. So yeah. What was your experience like for opening day? What was the vibe and how'd that roll for you?
So I didn't mention anything to you because I knew you were going on vacation, and I didn't want to rub it in,
Oh, yeah.
I get to go to opening day. I get to go to the White Sox opening day. You get to be with your family out on vacation in Tennessee. I didn't want you to, you know, feel bad that you're going to be missing out on the festivities.
I appreciate that. If nothing, you are a very sensitive person to my feelings, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
So, a gorgeous day. I mean, it was a, how about, you know, we've sat, you and I have sat in shorts maybe a couple of years ago. I, of course, sat in, you know, snow flurries. We've been in rain delays. And, you know, folks listening, you know, I've heard some stories, people going way back, decades and decades that they've been going to opening day, and they've seen it all, been through it all. All things considered, it was a pleasant day. Sun was out. Parking lots were packed, and I got to thank a loyal listener, and this was a gentleman I met in the old neighborhood in Bridgeport, especially when I was doing Lockdown White Sox, John Devaney, working for Phil's Pizza, the greatest pizza place in Chicago and maybe in the world. I don't know. Ooh. I can't say, but Phil's is my place. I love that. Everybody's got their, you know, favorite pizza place, no matter what you're, where you live, where you go. But my place is Phil's on 35th in Bridgeport. And John is so great. He listens to Good Guys. He was listening to Locked On, and we've connected on social media, and he reached out and said, hey, you know, I'm going to hook you. I'm going to give you the hookup. And Pat, you've received the hookup too. And I'm gonna, you know, I will give you the details on all that, but got some parking help from John, so thank you. That was huge, and got to meet a lot of people. You know, I went with some of my cohorts for Future Sox, so Danny Miller, Ian Eskridge, Steve Hassman, who jumped on Sleepy Herald, filled in last week here on Good Guys, and James Fox, of course, and had a great afternoon, ran into so many other people. Gosh, you know, on the, you know, just walking the concourse, you know, in the parking lots. And so I am, you know, my car is parked in the neighborhood, Pat, and I'm walking through, and I wanted to get the experience because, again, if you've never been to, you know, an opening day tailgate, especially when it's nice. I mean, everybody is out. It's a holiday. People are reconnecting with family and friends that they might not have seen for a while. You know, you've got that, those specific Sox friends. The grills are out. I mean, it is quite the scene, and the smells. Oh, my, the smells. They are amazing. And in a day like Thursday, that's what was happening. So I'm walking through, and I get, you know, to the front, or I should say, you know, the north side of the kind of the stadium where the old home plate is, where all the AstroTurf is now. And they've got the Shy Sox Bar and Grill and the Depot. And I'm making my way in lot B trying to find the Future Sox folks. And who do I see kind of like wandering a little bit by themselves, but a guy that looked exactly like John Schriffen. And I kind of did a double take. I'm like, this can't be him. I mean, they're like 2 hours until the game kicks off. Like, why is he in the parking lot? And sure enough, you know, I, of course, yell out. And, you know, he stops.
What did you, wait a minute, what did you yell out?
Why?
Did you do like the Kramer? You're like, yo, yep, yep. Hey, papa.
From Dinky's Donuts. Yeah, I was just stamping my foot on the asphalt, just banging my knee, just screaming nonsense and gibberish. And, I yelled, John. I said, John Schriffen. And he had like big kind of like, he had some aviator sunglasses on, and he had that really nice like zip up Sox jacket that you've probably seen managers and such wearing. I really like it. It's sharp. He's about 6'3", 6'4". So we were kind of eye to eye.
Yeah.
And so if you're wondering if I was intimidated or anything, which I of course wasn't, you know, I said, John, you know, John Schriffen looks at me. We're about 20 feet away. Comes walking over, smiling, shakes my hand. I'm like, what are you doing? What are you doing out here?
And does key card not work?
And he goes, yeah, right.
He's trying to get a hold of
it. They locked me out. They locked me out. And he goes, look, man, he goes, I just want to experience this. This is my first, you know, opening day, my first Sox home experience. When it counts, and I've heard all these rumors about the tailgates and everything, I want to be boots on the ground, walking around, meeting fans, checking this all out. And I just said, you know, good on you first and foremost. Yeah. I mean, you know, when this gets out, when the cat gets out of the bag that this is what you're doing, you know, I think people, you're going to win a lot of people over, you know, by what you're doing right here. You're doing your homework. And I said, and he was, you know, he and I had, we were like equals, Pat, he and I talking, talking White Sox. And I just said, you know, how are things going? You know, we talked up, you know, just his experiences with Steve. And I said, you know, what you're watching and what you're going to be walking through here is really unique, John, because as stadiums are built now and right downtown and the parking lots are eliminated, this tailgating thing is going away. And this is what, like, we kind of pride ourselves on as Sox fans is tail, and lot B can get crazy. I know everyone's got their favorite lots, but there's a lot that goes on in lot B. Just take a look at the spreads, what people do. Even on a beautiful day like today, you're going to find that. And he said, well, you know, like I want to meet up with some, you know, I want to check out some of these big tailgates and everything. And before we started walking to one of the big tailgates, he took his phone out of his pocket and he says, let's take a picture, you and I. I want to remember this experience.
With you, Nick Morawski.
He wanted to take a picture of me. I didn't ask him. Not that I wasn't going to ask him. Of course I wanted to have a picture with him. He takes his phone out and takes a picture of us.
Well, did he know who you were?
Is he aware of the show? Of course I explained Good Guys Talk Back. And you
of
know,
course future you did. Sox did you give him a sticker?
I'm going to connect with him. I'm going to get him a whole prize pack, t-shirt, koozie, sticker, the works. So I said, look, see that flag over there, which was the, you know, the bums, you know, the Chicago sports bums flag, the Whiskey at Comiskey event. You know, they hold these Whiskey at Comiskey events, which are, I mean, they do an outstanding tailgate, by the way. If you've never been into one of the bums tailgates, oh my goodness, they've got food. I mean, talk about hospitality, drink, great people. And I said, there's their flag. You want to meet some diehards? You want to go to a big tailgate? Follow me. And I thought maybe he was going to say, you know what? It's getting close to game time. I better go up and like read through the media guide or something. He goes, all right, let's go. You lead the way. So I'm needling through some of the cars. We were probably 50 feet away. I got into the, you know, into the tailgate area, kind of introduced John to a bunch of different people.
You were introducing him to people.
I got him pumped into the social pipeline of the bums and got to talk to Brian and, you know, Yumper and a couple other people, Southside Zoe, and then I was able to meet Danny, Ian, and James at the Future Sox area. And I didn't, you know, I started seeing all the pictures and everything on Twitter X of John, you know, putting out there, you know, thanking people, and he's taking pictures, and I mean, so awesome. And I said, you know what, this is great. Hopefully I get that picture somehow. So I put something out, you know, just, hey, so great to run into you, John. I'm so glad, you know, you're just getting the lay of the land, you know, getting to see how everything goes on opening day, not thinking too much of it. I was just blown away that he was doing that. I thought that was just a great thing for him to do, because professional broadcaster, shoes to fill, just as Jason had shoes to fill. Mm-hmm. Jason, born a Sox fan, Hawk around forever. We like Sox fans are going to be kind of cockeyed. Like, hey, wait a second. Like what's like, did you do your homework on this team, on the fan base, all this kind of stuff? That's how we are as Sox fans. And he's putting the work in right away, you know, trying to get a sense of the culture and what goes on. So the next day, which was awesome, on Friday, the day off, I saw something on Twitter where he calls me out. I mean, he doesn't have to do this. I don't care if he, you know, hey, we had a moment. That's great. He finds me on Twitter, tags me and says, you know, really, really kind, nice thing, you know, that I, you know, brought him to this, to the bums tailgate and everything. And that's kind of how his day got kicked off and everything. And he shared the picture. So now I've got the picture back. I mean, how awesome is that? I thought that was a really cool experience.
What a day. Now you're rubbing it in. Well, you weren't rubbing it in before when you didn't tell me that you're going to the game. Now I feel bad. I really wish I had been absent for this moment, but I'm here. that's a cool story, Nick. Good on you for doing that and helping the guy along. And that's fantastic that he took the opportunity to walk around, be amongst the fans and take in the culture a little bit, because I think he probably recognized and is self-aware enough to know that I really need to be able to do this for people to trust me with their broadcasts on a day in and day out basis, because otherwise I'm just another guy in the booth and I'm a stopgap to the next guy that maybe, you know, might be coming along later. So, you know, that's a great story. I did see a lot of those pictures on Twitter X and all that, but I didn't know the extent of the story, obviously, of what you did. And that's really cool. So that's a great way to open up the year. And it led to no runs.
The Sox, of course, off to a 0-3 start. I do want to talk about the game. Good to have Adam and Brian in. Thank you guys so much, everybody, for jumping in here on Sunday night as we do this live. If you ever listen to the audio and you're like, oh, I'd love to get in on the conversation, you know, join us. Join us on the YouTube channel. Yeah, this was, you know, we've got our Pedro Grifol quote of the week towards the end of this episode, but I'll give you something right off the bat. This is Grifol on the 0-3 start. These are heartbreakers, 3 one-run games, could have gone our way, didn't go our way. So our fearless leader just kind of waxing on the philosophy of baseball and how if you don't win, you will lose. This is what you're going to experience, I think, throughout the season. These kind of one-run games. I thought Saturday's game, the middle game with the Luis Robert Jr. Magic, that one was the heartbreaker because of, you know, the initial hole that the Sox were in. We had a 3-run lead and we blew it. And that was those were two Luis Robert Jr. bombs. Like, that's a game you win. You have got to win. And that was your extra inning game, Pat,
yeah,
that you're talking about.
And I would lie to you to say, because I was gone, so I didn't get to see much of the games. I'm just watching through, you know, some highlights after the fact and things like that. But, it, you know, just to put it in a microcosm of what we've experienced watching this team, it's the same type of stuff. In Saturday's game, why it drives me crazy, again, as I mentioned, the extra inning stuff, it's just, I don't know why it gnaws at me for what it is. Ever since the rule change, even before that, extra innings has been a really a bugaboo for this team, especially at home when you should have the advantage of winning those games. But if you don't have the ability to score runs after the seventh inning and add on to a lead that you have with this bullpen that you're going to experience, and as it continues to wear down, you know, because we're going to make the assumption, maybe I'm making the assumption in the wrong way, that the starting staff is going to, you know, be going not till so far into games, the bullpen is going to be taxed more and more. You're going to have to score runs more often after the seventh inning and add on. Now I know that's easier said than done, especially with an offense that's not prolific at this point, but you can't stop scoring runs at a certain point and assume you're going to win games. So at any advantage, any opportunity that you have to squeak another run or two across in the seventh, eighth, and ninth is going to be, you know, paramount to winning some of these games that seem to, as Grifol probably was alluding to, slip through your fingers. That's just the way it's got to be, because you're going to have to find a way to kind of outslug teams when you have a team that can't really slug. So that bothers me a lot.
Saturday, game two was called a win on the margins game, even though Luis Robert Jr. hit two home runs, and they were no doubters. I mean, he's Mr. Danger. He is the guy that
Mr. Danger.
I mean, he is the guy that every pitcher, and you could see how Detroit, like as the game went on, they just didn't know how to handle him. You know, they were afraid to pitch this guy, and Aloy couldn't do anything with it. And that's the problem. You know, if this continues with Luis, and who knows with Aloy now that he's hurt, we'll get to that. But, you know, Saturday, hey, they had opportunity. They had two men on, nobody out, couldn't do anything. Bases loaded, one out. Aloy hits into a double play. Stop me if you heard that already. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was going on all of the time last year. And again, it's early, but I think as Sox fans, we're like, show me something different. I know it was supposed to be different. You know, show me, you have this opportunity. When on the margins, you have to take advantage of this opportunity. You can't let it go to waste. And then Aloy in the 10th. I mean, 10th inning, you've got the ghost runner, the given runner, whatever you want to call it there. Aloy, what are we all screaming? As anybody who's watched baseball, Sox fans, hit it to the right side. You've got to be shooting it to the right side. Drive something. Aloy swings at the first pitch. It was in on his hands, and he pops it up. Now, the opposition knows exactly what Aloy should be doing, right? I mean, their pitching team, that pitcher is like, this guy's trying. He wants something on the outside corner so he can take it to right field. So good on this pitch. And busted him in, which any good pitcher would do. So you don't swing at that.
Well, that's
not, you know, that's not your successful pitch. That if it's, and I think, and Becca maybe brought it up in the post game on NBC Sports Chicago, but I think Aloy wanted to play hero after he failed earlier in the game. And I'm just thinking swing, 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 no matter what, when this pitch is released. And there you go. I mean, it's just,
you have to, again, I'm not going to sit here and pretend I know what I'm talking about half the time with this stuff, but you said it right there. They're going to try and bust you in. You have to think, okay, in this situation, right, I'm going to take myself out of myself for just a moment. In this situation, I need to do X to, you know, give the best opportunity for my team to either tie the game or take the lead or win the game in whatever situation it might be. I need to be able to put a ball in the, you know, if it's a sacrifice fly situation, I need to be able to put the ball in the air. So I know I can't be swinging at these several pitches and I have to look for it here. It will give me the best opportunity to hit the ball in the outfield, in the air, and score that run. Or I've got to be looking in this zone. If it's not in that zone, I'm not going to be swinging at it until I get two strikes on me when I have to get into protect mode. So it's just, to me, again, shows this team, and that's, I guess, what is so maddening sometimes is, and you and I can sit back and talk about it and make it sound so simple. I know it's not that simple when you're trying to hit a 95-mile-an-hour baseball. I get that. But it seems like this team is unable to get over the hump mentally. Like, listen, this is how the game needs to be played in order to win. Yeah, we love the ball to go over the fence and we love to see you swing as hard as you can. And we get how baseball games are won these days by multiple home runs, mostly in games. And that's how it's done. But there is still a place in the game for situational baseball where I have to be able to do this and swinging at pitches and in my hands, I'm not going to be able to do that.
It's a lack of discipline. It's a lack of preparation. And I don't know if it's, you know, again, because it's been going on for a while, I just think maybe it's just Aloy, like, I'm not going to put the work in. I don't care what is being preached to me. You know, we heard from Luis Robert Jr. This past week and same game, you know, he just launches two home runs on Saturday. Exciting. I mean, I just think this guy, this is how it's going to be throughout the season, is we're going to be watching more for individual performances, namely Luis Robert Jr. What did he do? How exciting is he? You know, he came out and he had a statement after the game saying that like what he was working on in the offseason was tracking pitches, you know, waiting for a pitch in a certain area that he knows that this is what I can do something with. I can drive this ball. I can be productive. And if it's not in that area, that's not a pitch for me. I will wait till that pitcher comes to me. And that's, you could see, okay, he wanted to talk about that after his game on Saturday, because I think he felt, you see what I was able to do. You know, yeah. I think he was proud of the work that he put in the offseason. Now, again, first series, first weekend, and I don't know when we're going to see Aloy next as he's going to be evaluated. We'll get into it in a moment. But when the same things keep happening over and over and just ground balls and like you're our DH, elevate the ball. I'd like to see some of that, please.
Let me ask you this, Nick. Yeah. I'm just curious, and I hate to go back to this and almost like, because eventually I feel like we're turning into 1985 Bears fans, right? Back in 2005, this is what happened. Sure. It was the greatest thing we've ever seen.
Right.
But would the player be different if Ozzie Guillen was managing the player? Or is it just the player is unable to receive the information no matter who is giving it to him?
That is, I think, what we've kind of bounced around for at least a season, if not more. Maybe these players just can't do the things that they're being asked to do. You know, maybe that's the discovery, is you've got the raw talent, you have the raw ability, but these changes, these responses to what opposition is going to be doing, how do you adapt to the game at different levels, you know, season by season? They aren't willing or can't. You know, I'm starting to think it's a can't. Like,
I think it's a bullheaded approach to, you know, my ability is greater than anything that anybody else's game plan, right? I have the ability. I've had that ability my whole life, and I've been overcome. But when you get to this level, Nick, it's got to be like, listen, the guy in the mound is pretty good. They've been given every analytical piece of information they can have before I get up there. They've been in the bullpen. You know, if it's a guy coming in relief, they've been prepping. They know exactly where my weaknesses are. They know the situation. But you know what? I can hit the ball 500 feet, so I'm just going to swing hard and do it. I don't care what it's got to be a little bit of a humbling situation for the player to go, listen, I got to do my homework too. And I have to pay attention to the situation too. And you know what? Maybe I should listen to my coaches and all the analytics that I've been giving as well to my advantage. Now, it's not always going to work, because if it did always work, guys would hit, you know, more than, you know, 300, you know, as a fantastic batting average, which I know batting average isn't something people care much about these days. But if you could do it all the time, you would just get hit after hit after hit, and it would be easy. That's not the case. But you have to have some level of success sometime.
Even if Pat, though, he showed me he was trying. Like, he was trying to hit it to right field. He was trying to do what he should be doing, or at least laid off that first pitch he saw that was inside of his hands. And that would clue me in as a fan, like, okay, he's got a plan. He's disciplined enough. He knows that he can't do anything with it that's going to help this team, or frankly himself. I would have liked to seen that. You know, Phil jumping in. We appreciate you having you, Phil. Like, and I'm talking about trading Aloy for whatever we can get. And I've heard it from a lot of people over the last few days, is get him out of here. What value does he have? And this is a guy that had, you know, a good spring. Yes, it was spring. I get it. But we've said that, you know, about guys like Crochet, who I still want to talk about here from opening day, which was probably one of the highlights, if not the highlight of the weekend, along with me beating John Schriffen and probably saving the day for him. I don't think anybody wants Aloy. They tried to shop Aloy Jimenez this offseason, you know, and now with this other, this bout of health issue here, you know, eventually you have to say, this is who he is, right? You know, his body just can't hold up. You know, he can't do what he's being asked to do, and his body can't hold up. If you didn't see Sunday's game, Sox, of course, lost another one-run game, 3-2 to Detroit. Aloy Jimenez left with an adductor strain. He hurt himself in the sixth inning against the Tigers. He is going to be evaluated. He was running to first base, as you saw probably watching the game. And I was watching it, too, in real time, and it just looked like he was kind of lollygagging. This was not the fast approach that I was told. And then they showed a replay, and Stone mentioned that it looked like he was grimacing there on the swing and did not go full bore all the way down. So he had a rash of injuries last season. He's no stranger to the IL. So we will see what happens here.
I mean, honestly, what could you get for him? I mean, the old saying, your greatest ability is your availability. And
cash considerations.
I don't know.
At this point, I'm
not willing to just trade him for a bag of baseballs. You're not getting any kind of value back. I don't know what you do with him. I'd say you keep him. You keep trying to ride him until he gets hot, and then try and trade him. I mean, there's no
in a season like this where it's like, you know, we're going off on this extra innings thing, and okay, you know, in the grand scheme of things, but this is what you and I do on this podcast. This is why I wanted to do a podcast like this, because we are in the weeds on stuff with the White Sox. You know, we're on the game within the game. And when you look at a situation like that in extra innings, to your point of how miserable we've been in extra innings, and anybody that's watched the Sox recently knows it. Well, like, what's causing that? You're not just like cursed. There's a series of events that happen. You know, there's a process. And I just, if he can't stay healthy, and then we have other guys that we might want to check out this year, you know?
Yeah.
I hope it's just nothing. You know, he's back in the lineup, you know, maybe later this week. You know, he's cleared, he's checked out. And that this was just a rough weekend for him, and he can somehow get back into that Arizona form. I don't know. Am I being delusional or just positive?
Somewhat. I mean, at this point, it just seems, this is what his body is, regardless of, you know, the routine or the preparation or the strength and conditioning coach or whatever it might be. This is just who the guy is. I think it's interesting though. You know, I'm okay with people, you know, getting on him, you know, for not performing, like we've just talked about, not being disciplined and not being able to do the job when the job needs to be done. It's the people that want to ridicule him for being hurt all the time. I don't know 100% if that's always all on him. It seems too freakish sometimes for it to be all on. It just might be what his body is, and he can't maybe change anything about it. I have no idea. It just seems to me the guy is just got an injury prone makeup. So I can't really say Eloy Jimenez sucks because he gets hurt all the time. I can say he sucks because he didn't do this when we needed the situation, and he wasn't able to come through in this situation. But I can't really say, well, trade the guy, he sucks because he's always hurt.
You could say Eloy Jimenez is not a reliable option, and that might be a catch-all for physicality, for performance, you know, what have you. It was frustrating to see that on Saturday in a game that they absolutely, you know, should have won. Soroka gave you five innings, four runs. He spotted Detroit three runs right out of the get-go. And that's why it was like, oh, wow, the Sox fought back. They had a 6-3 lead thanks to, you know, the power. It sounded from some of his quotes that he just didn't feel, he didn't feel good, comfortable early on, and then he found his footing. If you watch the game, you know, and I put this out on Twitter X, when I was watching him pitch, Pat, Soroka on Saturday, the way the ball was moving, and he's a right-hander, it looked like Esteban Loaiza.
Oh, Steven.
Yeah. The way that ball was.
He got some wacky, you know, dust from Esteban Loaiza, and maybe,
you know, hopefully it doesn't turn out like it ended for Loaiza, but I'll take that all-star season any day.
What year was that? That was fantastic.
Well, I think that was 2003 when the Sox hosted the all-star game. Someone maybe correct me in the comments, but I think that was 2003 when
left-handers had zero chance against Steven that season. He had that ball that would start in on their, like right over their wrists.
Yeah. And
it would drop back into the zone. They had no shot.
Yeah. And then he would put, you know, instead of the cutter that would move away from a right-hander, it almost looked like he had the screwball working where he would, you know, it's murderous on your elbow, you know, especially if you do it wrong, but you're twisting your hand, and that baseball is now cutting into a right-hander. And then you could also start it in the left-hander box to a right-handed hitter, and it will come in Maddox-esque. I'm not saying he was Greg Maddox, but if you saw a video of Greg Maddox, you'd say, wow, that ball bouncing around like Loaiza was able to do it that year. I don't know. Soroka had some of that, you know, not overpowering stuff, but when you have movement, man, and you can spot it and you can keep guys off balance, hopefully, you know, whatever kind of butterflies or what have you were going on for him, his next start was a little bit easier.
I still believe in that, Nick, as far as pitchers go. I know that, and just in talking, my nephew plays high school ball, and I was talking to him one day, and I said, you know, and he's trying to pitch and, you know, all that stuff. And I said, man, you don't have to be overpowering. Mm-hmm. But he's like, oh, that's all these coaches care about is how hard you throw. I said, the movement, man, the movement and the ability to put the ball where you want to put it should give you an advantage over guys. And he said, oh, that's just, they don't care about that. They got the radar gun out. They want to see how hard you throw.
That's the sad thing about where like Little League and baseball is going at a younger level. And I've heard this from a few other people too, just exit velocity off of a tee for like middle schoolers. I'm like, give me a break. And if that's really the case with what you're talking about in terms of a pitching, that's a short-sighted pitching coach and management team or whatever's going on, because you work on that changeup. I wish I learned this years ago. You know, I was working on a curveball probably before I should have been working on a curveball. And I wish I was working on a changeup with my fastball at a younger age. And you're mm-hmm. spotting, if you can spot and you could take a little bit off the fastball and you could work on your changeup and get very confident. I also would put if I could do this all over again, I would put like a full length, you know, head to toe mirror, you know, rectangular mirror. And I would watch my motion on how the ball was hidden, you know, mm-hmm. like, so I was not giving away the grip or anything of the ball to the batter until the last second. I would work on how I hide the baseball, you know, and because that makes a huge difference. Now I get it. Velocity is velocity, but at that age, it's about control. It's about keeping guys off balance, inside, outside, up, down, keeping guys guessing. That to me seems like you're going to get some kids hurt. I mean, I think we've already probably been seeing it.
Well, and look what's happened at the major league level over the past 20 years. You know, guys going down with elbow and shoulder injuries like crazy. I don't know. I wasn't, you know, paying attention that closely back in the 70s and 80s, but I don't know. It is what it is. I didn't mean to derail you, but
no.
It's, you know, if you're talking,
I love talking guy, pitching. I love
if,
it.
If you're telling me a guy goes out there and he has a good outing and it wasn't overpowering, but he was hitting his spots and changing speeds and changing eye level, I'll take that every day. And if that can be consistent, there's a spot in my rotation for a guy like that.
You want to talk about overpowering and you want to talk about injuries. It's a good segue to Crochet. He was your opening day pitcher. And this is a guy that wanted it from the get-go. From mid-February, he was talking about it. There were quotes out from Getz and others that he's going to have an opportunity to win a rotation spot. We all thought they were crazy. There's no way. There's no way with the history that Crochet has, the lack of innings, that he is going to actually be in the rotation. And he had a great spring. I got to see him, you know, of course, in person. You saw what he did. I don't think he gave up a single walk in Cactus League play. Velocity was back up there. I mean, he looked like he was ready to take care of business throughout you know, the Cactus League. And so he wins the spot, which I think is a great story. I mean, here's a guy that wants it. And then he put in the work, you know, and I'm sure this was all going on in the off season too. There's no way they were talking about Crochet openly if they did not already do their homework on this guy, that he has a legitimate shot. So he puts the work in, he gets the results and he gets the opening day start. And that's a great story. That makes me want to definitely show up in person. So the rumors or the chatter of maybe he's just an opener, maybe he's going to go 2, 3, maybe 4 innings. And it's like, all right, well, we'll see what we get out of this guy. Pat, I don't know if you went back and you watched any of the video or any of the highlights from opening day. Crochet was a madman in a good way. He was on a mission. I'm sure adrenaline was going through the roof. 87 pitches, 61 for strikes. He was up at 98 miles per hour. I did not see anything higher. If someone saw something higher, let me know. Six innings, eight strikeouts, no walks. And this game was like 2 hours and 3 minutes.
Yeah.
It flew. And obviously there was some bullpen that came in. Kopech was a little shaky, to say the least, but what an awesome performance by Crochet.
Yeah. I mean, those are the things you're going to have to kind of glean to this season is those individual performances when they happen and stories like that about guys that have overcome some adversity and gotten where they're at. So, you know, in the, you know, just a very short sample size of him being a starting pitcher, you know, that he checked a lot of the boxes for me in terms of the control, in terms of the strikeouts, in terms of the efficiency as well. Now he got himself, you know, into the sixth inning and that was all fantastic, but you know, he could have gotten a lot of strikeouts and had over 100 pitches in that time frame too. I doubt they would have let him throw that many pitches to begin with, but the efficiency is what I like to see. Nick is not messing around, hitting your spots, having the control and being able to throw it, you know, in the upper 90s from the left side. I mean, that's give me more. Yeah. I don't know how much more we'll be able to get this year. I say enjoy it while it lasts type of thing. Not to say that I think he's going to go down with an injury, but I do think, you know, well, we've talked about, he doesn't have more than what now with the opening day, 90 something innings in his major league career, whatever it is.
Less than that, I believe.
Less than that. So I don't expect him to be able to, you know, he's going to need some time probably he's going to go through a dead arm period.
Sure. Of course.
Maybe multiple dead arm periods throughout the year. So there will be,
but that's normal. Like,
yeah,
I'll take that. If that's according to plan and schedule, it's obviously we want to anything more than that. You know, we don't want any hearings of any tears or, you know, strains or elbow stuff. Like, that's what we want to stay away from. There is going to be wear and tear, and that's normal for a guy like him who's probably going to be in uncharted territory, you know, throughout this season. But so far, you know, there's just the confidence, the moxie, you know, from this guy.
I love the moxie.
Yeah, that wanted it, got it, and performed. And I don't remember too many full counts either. I mean, he was just peppering the zone. Which was great to see. Sacks offense against Skubal, who they've seen quite a bit. Zero walks, three hits, no extra base hits, really for anybody. And you know, that was depressing. That was a game where, you know, you're gonna say, man, like, you got to take those games. You got to find a way to win those games when you get a pitching performance like that. But you know, Skubal definitely fooled the White Sox hitters, but I feel like that happens. You know, you're like, it's a guy that's pitched against us over and over. We seem to sometimes like not go back to video or not have a better game plan or not know exactly, you know, should maybe we change an approach or how should we handle this person that we've seen before? Whatever they did, it didn't work. But I think it was Crochet that you walked away from. And I'll tell you what, Pat, you know, one of the other big highlight of this weekend was seeing these videos and photos of this campfire milkshake that has got everybody all hot and bothered by this thing.
Did you get one?
I did not. I did not get one. You know, I got to pace myself, but I think their stadium club, I believe, which is maybe 300 level, but they're also the Vizzy, that Vizzy bar that I think is up on the 500 level.
I think so.
Anybody can get them.
Yeah.
And the demand's going to be through the roof, though. I don't know if you're going to want them this coming week, if they even play baseball with the weather that's being predicted. We're going to have some tough weather and a very tough opponent, but Sunday, obviously, you know, the end of this series, and Fetty was on the mound, and he gave up a couple home runs, and then Tim Hill was not good. I'm bullish on Fetty. I want to see Fetty do well. I think he can do well. I think there's a chip on his shoulder. coming over from the KBO, getting paid fairly handsomely in terms of White Sox money, figured out a pitch, got something to work that hopefully will make his previous major league experience kind of go away, because it wasn't good when he was with the Nationals. And I think he's going to want to prove people wrong and the White Sox right. And it wasn't a horrible outing at all. You know, it's just the lack of offense for the Sox. You had Corey Lee and Paul DeJong flexing the power, which is, you know, nice to see early on. But it's like you had said at the top, man, you got to score more runs. It's just how that's going to have to be.
Well, it's good to, you know, see some positives from this weekend. So it wasn't all terribly negative. There were some things that you can say, okay, that we can kind of root for that in that moment there, here or there. But, you know, to me, you know, again, viewing from a little bit of a distance and not being completely locked in, you know, from pitch one of opening day till the last pitch today, you'd have to see, like what you saw mostly from a pitching standpoint, which, you know, we were in every game. We had opportunities. But again, when you look at the lineup and the way the undisciplined nature that they go about it, you're not going to overcome too much when you can't put people on base. It's a little bit alarming again, especially in the first game, the lack of walks. Now, maybe, you know, the game plan was to be aggressive or what, I don't know what the game plan was. But to me, I would scrap it all and say, listen, let's game plan for this pitcher today. We need to have more of a mindset of getting on base, regardless of who the pitcher is. And that means we have a goal today. I don't even know what would be good, Nick. What would you say? Would it be like 4 to 5 walks a game is good for a major league team?
Well, Sox had 5 walks in the entire series.
Okay.
I think their high watermark was 4 possibly in game 2 in Saturday's game. So if you can give me 5 or 6, I think that's a nice number.
I think a goal for the team every game, guys, this is our goal and our focus is 5 walks. This lineup needs to get 5 walks today somehow, some way. And eventually you would think just from the additional runners on base, you're going to have more opportunities and score more runs. So I would kind of make it a little bit more simplified and stop thinking about, well, this pitcher and this zone all the time. And I get all that. I do 100%. But to me, maybe it's got to be simplified even to the nth degree. And like, guys, we just got to find ways to get on base and continue to you know, increase pitch counts and all that stuff that benefits from drawing walks. I just can't understand how you can go a game without a walk. I just don't.
It's a lack of discipline. I mean, you know, yeah, it's maddening. I mean, you'd look at some of the numbers and some of the stats after games last year and the amount of strikeouts and the lack of walks and just swinging at pitches out of the zone. I get where you're coming from, Pat, and I thought that was going to be kind of changed a little bit. We would have at least seen something different this first series, a little bit more discipline, some selective at-bats. I saw some running. I mean, you know, Shoemake, there was a double steal.
I saw people running around.
People were doing baseball things. You know, they were a little aggressive on the base paths. You got to get on base to be aggressive on the base paths, mm-hmm. though.
That would help, Nick. That would help. And I'm going to do a little research when I get an opportunity, just looking at, you know, what teams last year were top 3 or 4 in both leagues in terms of walks and where that correlated in terms of runs. And I know that the Sox were at the bottom of the list, and they were at the bottom of the list in terms of probably runs. I know it was run diff where they were at the bottom of the list. I would just like to say, listen, guys, if we want to be like these other teams or strive to be like them, we have to be able to grow in this one area that I think will have a spider web effect on the rest of our offense, because it can't just all be about, you can't be fast, Nick, if you're not on base. And this team has to find a way to get on base more often.
You know what stung about, you know, getting swept this first series is that it was against the Tigers. It was against the AL Central, mm-hmm. the division that, you know, comically, has been talked about as we're lucky to be in this division almost, you know, and we said it before the season started, you got to take advantage of it. You're going to play the division in April and May. And when you're not playing the division, you're playing teams that are built for October and beyond. You know, we'll see that in Atlanta. Atlanta's coming to town. That's a team that's built to win, and they know it. I think they started the season 2-1. You know, again, I don't know what's going to happen with the weather. It's always dicey in early April. But then the Kansas City Royals, they've got four with the Royals. You know,
and, you know, traditionally we don't play well against the Royals regardless. So, Nick, I'm going to tell you this, and it was interesting. I'm on a text chain with a couple of guys I used to work with, and all Sox fans. And somebody put on there today, you know, if they get swept by Atlanta, I bet you Pedro gets fired. And I couldn't disagree more. I really think this is looked at by Chris Getz as this is a throwaway season. It doesn't really matter. He could lose every game in April, and I don't think they'd fire him. It's just, I don't think that's happening. I know we're three games in, and I don't want to bring up the let's fire Pedro conversation, even though I think they should.
Well, you're talking about something that was brought up to you.
Yeah. And they're going to inevitably get swept by Atlanta. They'll probably lose 3 out of 4 to Kansas City. So you're looking at a 1-10 start.
Boy, that's your prediction. Oh boy.
That's
a 4-game series against Kansas City. So our next episode next Sunday, you're saying we're going to be talking about a 1-10 team.
Is that, did I do my math right on that? Or is that 1-9?
Well, you want 3-6, I think 1-9.
So 1-9. Sorry. I added on 1 just for good measure. we'll call it a Patrick Baker's dozen, but, I don't see it happening. I couldn't see it happening regardless. It's just going to be, you know, a lot of flush it conversation. And we were, you know, that's the way baseball goes. And we were in these games and, you know, blah, 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 all this other crap that's going to be spewed. But we mentioned it a couple weeks ago. We looked at the schedule in April and what it was going to give us. It's a lot of AL Central. You're getting exactly what you want because you're so thankful to be here. But outside of that, I think it's Philadelphia. Obviously, it's Atlanta. Tampa Bay's in there.
Toronto. Baltimore.
So you've got a lot of really good teams coming, and you're going to over this first month of the year, and you're not a very good team. And this was an opportunity right here to start out the season and give yourself a little bit of a buffer to win 2 out of 3, or possibly sweep a not so great Tigers team. And you blew that opportunity. So now you have no room for error.
Okay. This is an interesting topic. And I've had this discussion with a bunch of people over the last few days, weeks on Grifol. And, you know, I remember when Quinville became the coach of the Blackhawks. That happened early in that season. Not trying to make direct comparisons, but in just terms of like early hooks. Savard did not start off that season very well at all. He got a quick hook. Quinville was in the system already doing something with the Blackhawks. He was brought in, and the rest was kind of history. You got Charlie Montoya as your bench coach, and it reminds me of when they brought Renteria in as the bench coach for Ventura. Like, hey, Ventura, we've got a guy here that knows what he's doing. So just in case, which obviously
in case you step over a trap door, we have somebody here.
But to me, it all depends on, you know, and Getz and Grifol are obviously close. I think the reason why Grifol is in a White Sox uniform in the dugout is because Getz vouched for him. And Jerry apparently listens to anything Getz says and promotes him without even questioning anything. We know this. This really depends on if Jerry says to Getz, if he's not your guy, we want the guy that's going to be, you know, with this team for the next 3 to 4 years, that when we have certain pieces in place, maybe they do spend money in the off season and we put something together for 2025 and guys come up and we're starting to gel a little bit. You know, you want to get that guy in almost sooner rather than later, I think. You know, so I don't think Jerry, of course, wants to pay for a manager that's not managing. Grifol's got one more year after this. But if it's not working, and I'm not saying it's going to happen if they get swept from Atlanta, but towards the after the All-Star break or something, if this if the things that Grifol is preached here in year two, and this I'm obsessed with turning the team around. It's a little sneak preview to the Grifol quote of the week coming up here in just a moment. If those things aren't happening, those results aren't happening, we're seeing kind of like a lifeless team. You know, I get it. The wins and losses, the wins aren't going to be there, but it's the quality of baseball that they're playing and the decisions that Grifol's able to make with the lineup and the pitching and this, that, and the other. It is not happening. It doesn't look like he's learned anything. Well, then I think you have to, Getz has to say, look, if I'm really in charge here, I know the other two before me, there was a problem. You know, let's start new here. If I'm really the person, the only person making decisions, you know what, Grifol, you're a great dude. You could be a bench coach. You've got an impressive baseball resume, but you're not a manager. You're not going to be our manager anymore. I think it eventually happens, right? I don't think they're going to just say, well, since it's kind of a lost year, we'll just let you finish it. I don't know if that's necessarily true.
But Nick, you have to look at the actions of this organization of you know, just recent history. The lack of even doing your homework to bring in a new general manager, and even going through the steps of interviewing people, allowing the toxic relationship that was between Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams that had happened for what, over 20 years that they were together. So just the laziness that this ownership group has, I just see it as, well, we're not going to win anyway. Why should we fire a guy and pay two managers? I think regardless of how bad it gets, he's our manager for this year and probably into next year.
Wow. That would be really unfortunate. Maybe it's
more. I'm not saying that's what I want, obviously.
Yeah, I understand. Maybe it's more of the fan in me that's trying to will that to happen, where they would see that this is not the guy and just even put Montoya in there, you know, in August or something. That would mean a ton to me. I just don't think Pedro Grifol is at all competent to be the White Sox manager. I just don't. He can say all the stuff that he wants.
But the actions of the way this organization does things with front offices and managers, and maybe I could be proven wrong, and the narrative will be spun out there that, you know, Jerry cares and he wants to win, and that's why, you know, what's happened so far on the field is unacceptable and we have to move on.
Hey, Pat, Hahn and Williams left in midseason. We never thought that was going to happen.
That's true. It only took, you know, it only took the you know, befuddlement of that group together that couldn't decide, you know, they got in a pissing match every other day with who was really in charge, and nobody really knew. And Kenny Williams is, you know, outing media people, mm-hmm. letting them know who really is in charge, and, you know, undermining what their general manager can and can't do for it to happen.
Oh, what a great segue into just another bunch of hot mess here with our Pedro quote of the week.
I just feel like I should have like a cigarette ready for when you read this, because it's so satisfying.
So I've got kind of a two-parter here, something that Pedro said earlier in the week, and then what he said, around opening day. And if you're new to the podcast here, this is something that we've kind of do at the end of the each episode. Something that sometimes it's a classic hit from our leader, Pedro Grifol, but within season, it'll be probably more timely. So I don't have a message to fans, Grifol said. I don't think they want one. They want to see us go out and play. And I say that because if I'm a fan, I don't want to hear it. I want to see it. That's what Pedro said just a day or so leading up to opening day. And I was with him on that. I thought that was That was a good one. We don't want to hear it. I especially don't want to hear it from Pedro.
No.
I do not want to hear
it. The less we hear from Pedro, the better.
No, the less. I want to see it.
It's still good for our show.
Of course.
So please in keep some talking, ways, Pedro. I say more because yes. It creates good content for you and yeah. I.
So this is what most recently he had to say. I'm obsessed, Grifols said. I'm obsessed with turning this organization around and putting us in position where we can play for something. I can't get too far ahead because we're here at day one of the season, but I am obsessed with getting better every single day. Everybody has their motivation. Some is family, money, fame, whatever it is. It's all healthy because it takes you where you need to be, Grifols said. When 0.0 chance of winning the World Series, making the playoffs is put on us, it adds to the motivation. You don't think we can do anything? Well, watch. But we can't talk our way into having a good year. We have to do it. So based on that whole obsessed thing, turning this organization around, putting them in a position to play for something, That's what I go off of. Like you talk about pulling receipts. It's like if they just do not look like they're getting better and he is not able to guide them like he couldn't last year, then what are you going to do? It's like, you're obsessed, but you're clearly just, deranged. You're just a madman. Yeah. You're obsessed but you can't do anything about it.
It's one thing to really want something, Nick. And I think that's more where he's mistaken. He really wants this to happen. I don't think it's an obsession. He really wants this to happen. But I don't think he knows how. He doesn't have the ability or the know-how to do this. And I'm sure Pedro is a wonderful human being.
I'm sure he's lovely.
I feel bad that we rail on him like we do, but he just doesn't seem like he knows what the hell he's doing or what he's talking about half the time. So you can be obsessed all you want and want it. It's the, how do I do it?
I don't know anything about like model trains. And no, I could really? Say to you, I could That's say surprising. To somebody, I am obsessed with model. I am going to figure this out. I am going to build model trains. I want to learn about them. I'm going to have a great model train set up in my basement. I'm obsessed. But if I don't know what I'm doing and I'm not getting any better and I have no clue about any of that, what does that mean? That's worth nothing that I just told you that I'm obsessed. Anybody can be obsessed. Anybody can just be obsessed. Yeah. It's how you're going about that process with your obsession. Like, how are you getting better? What are you learning?
I think that's, we have a great meme or GIF or GIF, obsessed, the Pedro Grifols cologne. Like, that would be great.
Oh, boy. Obsessed. How about that smell?
Hey, Pedro.
Yeah.
Smell of failure and stale onions.
Mm. I did not get a dog with grilled onions on opening day.
You don't have to do it right away. I mean,
I know
you've had one before.
I know.
We'll go to a game this year. Another one, at least one.
Oh yeah, of course. That's my thing though. That's your thing. You were making them back when we were tailgating years ago. You were making the grilled onions. We were making our own version in the parking lots. That to me is Sox baseball, that food, that smell of those grilled onions. And you don't want to get that too early. That's the big mistake.
Big,
you walk in, you want to get your dog or your Polish with the grilled onions. I'm going to get it right now. Well, the onions, you got to let those onions caramelize. You got to let them sit on that flat grill for a little while. I know you want to beat the lines and I know you want to get your food, but you're not getting the real experience. You got to give it a couple innings.
That's what I love about you, Nick. You not only can you break down pitching for it, you can break down when the perfect time to go get your hot dog with onions and when it's going to be the best, and you're walking Schriffen around the tailgates and showing them around like you're just amazing. I'm just trying to
help the guy out. I love that he's out there. Good on him. And I got to steer him in the right direction. I'm just not going to say hello and leave him. If he's got a goal, if he's interested and really, getting the vibe of what's happening with this fan base and what's going on opening day in the parking lots, I'm not just going to leave them and say, good luck, you'll figure it out. Hey, let me walk you over there. You know, I'm just trying to help, man.
You are a helper.
I'm not the hero.
You're a helper. You're a good helper. You get the helper sticker of the week from the class. Good job.
Pat, always a pleasure, buddy. This I feel so much better.
You feel so much better?
Tomorrow might be different, but right now I feel better.
Right now I feel fantastic, too. It's good to be back.
Good to have you back. Yeah. The
assist last week, and I'm happy to be here and breaking down White Sox baseball.
Got a long, long season ahead of us, as so many people have mentioned, but it was awesome to have so many of you in the comments here on our live YouTube show. We do this every Sunday night at 9:15. Subscribe to the Good Guys Talk Back YouTube channel. We do appreciate that. Pass it along. The audio absolutely everywhere. We're on Twitter X at Good Guys TB. We've got a Facebook fan page. For Pat Hester, I am Nick Morawski. Until next time, go Sox.